and didn't wear my coat and tie, but there I was. They wanted me to wear Choctaw clothes, and so suddenly I was at Dublin Airport, and then I was in the west of Ireland, and that was when Ireland didn't have any motorways, and it took a long time to get to Mayo, seems like, from Dublin, and it was my first introduction. So that's how I came to be in Ireland, just representing something our older folks had done back in 1847, had made that initial connection with the Irish people through that donation.
And from in your book as well, you mentioned leading dance troupes.
Yeah,
around that time as well, you were singing and they were dancing.
Yeah, someone asked me to do that. In fact, the tribal government I was working for said we'd appreciate it very much if you know how to make arbors for our annual celebration, willow arbors. Do you know how to do that? And I said, yeah. And they said, do you know how to lead dances? You know, like sing for dancers. And I said, well, yeah, maybe so. And they said, well, we don't know any of our dances. We don't have any dances left. Can you teach us what you know? And that's how that happened. And so, and growing up, and as I was coming up, I had been around those places. And I suppose that's how you learn. You learn from hearing and watching and doing. And so I guess I had enough in me to start a dance troupe. And we did dance at the Atlanta Summer Olympics and in Belfast and at the Gallup Intertribal Ceremonials and lots of different places in between, just taking dancers around and singing for them. So did a little bit of that, like I said, in Belfast and also in Dublin as well. I hadn't done it in a long time, but that's how I got into that, I guess, sort of people wanted me to do it. And so I had enough in me to do that.
And so would that put you terribly on the spot if I asked you to do something like this on air now for our listeners?
No, it wouldn't be on the spot because you've been asking me now for like 2 days. So so I've been mentally preparing.
Mentally preparing.
Well, you know, I'd be glad to do that. But these are Indian songs from back home, from Oklahoma. So they'd be a bit different from probably what your listeners might be used to. I don't know,
but I don't know what I've made them listen to that, so far.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. So you might as well throw me in there. And
yes.
So anyway, let me get this square drum. It's the first time I've seen a square drum, Maria Angeline, and thanks for letting me borrow it. And you say it's from Portugal?
It's from North Portugal. It's called Unaduf.
Unaduf. Yeah. Okay. So we'll try that with my little finger. I have this drumstick. I was with Damien Dempsey and the Dublin Schools last week, and I made a bogus drumstick, you know, at the last minute because they wanted me to kind of hit a bar on, but I don't think I'll use that. I think I'll just use my little finger here and we'll see how it goes. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. This is a this is a prayer song from back home in Oklahoma. We manachi henna gya, yana wana ho. 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 Wani hayana hayene ne. We manachi henna gya, yana wana ho. Wani hayana hayene ne. We manachi henna gya, yana wana ho. We hayana hayene yo. Gishi ki mama to mene pe na na kawe no ne haya na haya ne ne we mana chi na gya ya na wana ho wande haya na haya ne ne we mana chi na gya ya na wana ho we haya na haya ne yo we.
I found it fascinating listening to you. I hadn't heard you before, and what struck me is how powerful native language can be. And I had this experience here in Ireland on a sacred site where an Irish woman began to do something a bit similar, but in the Irish language. And even though I didn't understand a word, I could feel it in my whole body, the power of the language of the land when spoken on the land. And listening to you now, I just got that sense as well, that it's like a different person when you are doing what you just did. You know, it's like you come into yourself a bit more and I have no idea what you said, but it felt quite strong. So I saw somewhere in your book as well, and I think you mentioned it to me in a previous discussion, about the importance of keeping some knowledge of the native language. Can you tell us a little bit why that's important? Because I feel this is something that address both your native land and Ireland. And there's a real relationship because Irish people were robbed of their language. And unfortunately now the younger generation have no connection, the majority. They're forced to learn at school, but they don't really see the point because nobody speaks Irish anymore. And yet there is something about knowing your native land. Can you tell us your native language? Can you tell us a bit more?
I could just sort of repeat what my grandfather told me in coming up. And that was a Second Fox song from Oklahoma, by the way, a prayer song. It was in that language. He said that as you're going through your life, you know, when you get to a point when you want to talk to the Creator, he said, even if you only know four words in your language, he says, use those words, because these original tongues, these original languages, are spiritual languages, and they're given by the Creator, a Creator. So they have the beauty and power of spirit, you know, these sounds that we make, you know, with our mouths and with our voices as they come out. And my grandfather said, one of these days, when that Creator is ready for you, that Creator might call you back, and you're standing there, they might ask you to repeat at least four words of that original language you were given, you know, before you can go on. So we take care of our languages, however it is that we express ourselves, our original tongues. Then what my grandfather was really saying, I think, is we're taking care of a spirit that was given to us as well, that attaches us to so many generations going behind, and hopefully ahead of us.
And would you say it's like also coming back to your more true self, your more to do with your essence, that in a way, I'm just wondering now, you know, in your land, you were robbed of your lands, you were robbed of your language in some way, because you had to follow, I think you used the word, the American dream in your book, that, you know, a lot of people kind of were seduced maybe into following that, well, first coerced and then later on seduced into following that American dream. And I suppose in Ireland the connection is similar, that the Irish people had to follow the British way of being. And so in a way part of the identity is lost in the process.
Yes, Maria, Angelina, I think so. When you're always looking to see yourself in someone else's mirror, you know, then I think that you could say that an internal colonization has happened, you know, in you, that you're really not yourself. We thought of it as an American nightmare, and later they called it, they said, no, that's an American dream, it's not a nightmare. And we could say the way we look at that idea about consumerism is that it's just that, it's people wanting to get things, and more things you have, the better person you are. That's, I think, essentially to me what the American dream is about, but it's a dream that's gone all over the world now. So I think it's better if we look to ourselves for our own identity, our group identity, rather than looking for our reflection in someone else's mirror. And I think that's what my grandfather taught me as well.
And I was interested to find out that the foreword on your book is from Martin McGuinness. Can you tell us what the connection is there?
Well, back in the 90s, I was doing a mural in Derry, in the Craigan, and outdoor mural on a building they called the Corned Beef Tin, or the Craigan Neighborhood Community Center. And I got to meet Martin McGuinness when he was a Sinn Féin counselor at that time. And he has a great affinity and love for First Nations peoples. And so we had that in common, and was able to relate to him on that basis. And through the years, he's been very kind to me. You know, he inquires about me when he knows I'm in Ireland. And I've met him a couple of times, you know, in Bangor, you know, when he was education minister for the North. And then again, he invited me to Stormont for tea when he became deputy first minister. And these are small kindnesses on his part, but they're very great to me that he would remember our friendship that way. So also, I think there's an affinity there between what had happened in Ireland, and to an extent could be argued what's still going on in some places in Ireland, and what happened to my people, my First Nations people. And so when it came time for a foreword to my book, I automatically thought of him, not really as much of his position, but in terms of him being a friend, and I was very happy that he wanted to write my introduction for me.
So I was wondering if you can tell us a little bit about your art, because I was lucky enough to have a look at your exhibition in All Hallows in Drumcondra, and I was really impressed by the details and the colours. But from reading your book, I discovered that something that's been with you for a very long time, the painting.
Yes, Maria Angeline, that's true. My father painted before I did, and I remember him telling me when I was little, he says, "You'll paint one of these days too." And he said, "When you do, you'll have the same helpers as I do." And I wondered what he meant by that. But I remember sometimes I'd go to bed and then sneak out and go into the kitchen and watch him paint. And he came up with wonderful things. He said they came out of his dreams. Sometimes he would wake up, but he had, in English, what we would call little people that would come to him, he said, and help him mix his colors. And so that was my father and his example. And so as I grew up, I found that I liked to paint too. And I suppose in a way, if you're a boy, sometimes, you know, you want to be that thing your father is, that you think he is, or at least follow in his footsteps. He used to do amazing paintings in the old flat, two-dimensional style of traditional Indian art. And so from that early age, that's what I always wanted to do. Up until maybe 10 years ago, I figured out I didn't have to do just that. So
I was wondering if it's the same for you, but for a lot of artists I know, you know, when you can express yourself through paint or writing or dancing or singing or any of the art form, it's like you step into a different consciousness. Or, you know, I was wondering how it is for you. Is it a way for you to kind of come inwards a bit more, or what happens for you when you paint?
Well, when I paint, I think it's the same now. I'm discovering this when I write, and I'm writing a novel at the moment that's being edited by a very good friend of mine who's a world-renowned writer who has been encouraging me, Emer Martin. I guess I wrote recently to that person that it's like walking into a dreamscape. And for me, this place at this time, Ireland, the dreamscape is wider and longer and deeper than it was for me in the States, you know, when I came a couple of years ago this time. So it is like walking into the spirit a bit, I think. I mean, without trying to sound goofy or anything, I would say it's like you have to be, I think, to really resonate, you know, within yourself, what you're doing, writing or painting or singing or dancing. You have to be as much in spirit as, I think, in flesh. There has to be that movement between and that balance of, and then I think you're in a place where you can be very happy for what you're doing.
And that's the sense I got, because the name of this program is called Living in the Now, and my experience of it is when you are engaged in an art form, whatever it is, you are 100% in the now. You cannot be caught in all your worries or problems or what happened yesterday or what might happen later. You're 100%. So in a way, it could be a great way for people to come to that place, as you say, where there's no yesterday, no tomorrow. It's just right now.
The moment, being in the moment. And that's what my culture is about traditionally. And I forgot that lesson for a long, long time, that we can have one foot in yesterday and one foot in tomorrow and completely miss being in today. And I had to relearn that lesson as I got older.
Yes, and I think, you know, I was just having the discussion with you just before we came on air about, I do feel that a lot of people come to Ireland, you know, they come to that place of being in your heart, being in the moment. There's something very special about Irish people in Irish land, you know, and it seems to draw that quality in ourselves. I don't know if that's your experience as well or not.
I think it is, and Marie Angeline, I couldn't articulate that very well for a long time, but as I was writing the book, I was visiting with a friend of mine who's actually from Crumlin, D12 here in Dublin, and he came up with a phrase that I used in the book, and I credited him with it, my friend Jerry, and he said, "Ireland is a dreamy land and a dreamy culture, and sometimes you get lost in dreams. And sometimes you get found." And I asked him what he meant by that, and he goes, "Well," he said, the spirit of the place sits up on top." He said, "Some places you have to go," he said, "and you have to sit with the land a while before you can really get to know it. But here," he said, "the spirit of the land is right there on top of everything, and you can feel yourself walking through it. You can feel yourself when it comes around." And he said, "That's a very heady mix, and some people will kind of get lost in that as if it were a dream or a dreamscape. And then out of that, too, can come amazing things, like Ireland is really punches well above its weight for the written word, you know, taking the language of the oppressor and really using it in a beautiful, unique way. And also, I'm very happy to say this time out, I've seen the visual arts in Ireland as if for the first time, and there's beautiful paintings, wonderful provocative works here. And I think if you're a creative person especially, and you come to Ireland or you feel like you're being asked to come to Ireland, and you start walking in this dreamscape here where everything does sit, you know, on top, and it's easy to feel it and so forth, it can't help but flow through you, come out in some way that might even be surprising to you.
So I was wondering if you could give our listeners your contact details, if people wanted to find out more. Now, your exhibition is in All Hallows at the moment in Drumcondra.
Well, I just took it down 2 days ago.
Oh, did you?
Father Eugene, yes, he told me, yes, 6 years is long enough. You better get him off. No, but hopefully it'll be at another venue soon, but it was a really nice venue. The culture minister, Jimmy Dinahan, opened it for us. So as of the last 2 days, it's in my studio at All Hallows, so they can come to All Hallows and ask for me, and I have a studio there, a painting studio there, and all my paintings are there, too, that I took down. Or they can ring me. I guess I could give up my number, I suppose. It's 085-769-2373. And like they would say in America, I guess, that number again is. So anyway, 085-769-2373 if they want to contact.
And then your book is available through Amazon, and as well in All Hallows they have some as well.
Yeah, and Hodges and Figgis and Eason's. And the book is called Touched by Thunder, and it's published in Ireland by Cura Press and in America by Left Coast Press.
So I was wondering if you could treat us to another little bit of your singing and drumming, but maybe a nice quiet one, because we usually end the program with a meditation, so maybe something a little bit more in that line.
Okay, I'll give it a shot. This is a very old and slow Choctaw song, "When We Dance All Night in the Morning Time." In English, this is called a Sunrise Walk Dance Song. And it ends everything. And as the sun's coming up, the people dance very slow around the fire in a long line. And so it really doesn't have much of a drum beat, but anyway, I'll give it a shot. Yo we ta ho ya ali, yo we ta ho ya li, ya we ta ho ya li, ya we ta ho ya li, Yahweh est Ahoyali, Yahweh est Ahoyali, Yahweh est Ahoyali, Yahweh est Ahoyali, Yahweh est Yahweh, oh Yahli, Yahweh, Yahweh, oh Yahli, Yahweh, Yahweh, oh Yahli, Yohli, Yohweh, Yahweh, Holy na, holy na, Yahweh, holy na, holy na, holy na, holy na, Yahweh, holy na, 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 holy